I'm excited to be here. I'm extremely excited and honored to be part of the Eshkolot project. And actually, I'm so tempted to start my talk. I feel like in the Eurovision, to start my talk by yelling, "Good evening, Moscow!" But I won't. I'll just start and I'll just upload my presentation. So, I'll start by just introducing what this paper will be about, and I entered more English text inside the PowerPoint presentation. So perhaps the Russian will be better. I don't know. I should try it. So the purpose of this paper will be to examine the reflections of esoteric ideas in Hebrew illuminated manuscripts from 13th century Ashkenaz and in German lands, with a focus on the image of knights and Ezekiel's vision of the divine chariot. And the manuscripts we see now on the right part of the screen are the manuscripts I'll talk about in this presentation. So it examines the texts and the images together with military history in order to provide, hopefully, a comprehensive description concerned with the ideas of two principal esoteric traditions in Ashkenaz, and that is of the Hasidic Ashkenaz, the German pietists, and Rabbi Nechemia, the prophet from Erfurt. And most of my talk will be based on my recent published book. It came out a year ago. It's here. Surprisingly enough. So if you're among the millions who read it, you'll be bored. If you're not, I hope you'll find it interesting. I hope my jokes are better in translation. If not, it's not on me. Okay, so there are three main esoteric traditions in Ashkenaz. The first, according to chronological order, the special cherub, which was active in northern France, at the end of the 12th century and beginning of the 13th century. Now, as far as I know, there is no illuminated reference to this. So we won't refer to the special cherub, but it should be mentioned. The second one is Rabbi Nechemia ben Shlomo, the prophet from Erfurt, active at the first third of the 13th century. And it was studied primarily by Moshe Idel, and now recently also by Naama ben Shachar. And the most famous one, which is categorized usually as Hasidic Ashkenaz, the German pietist, from the Kalonymus family and with the leader, Rabbi Judah the Pious, and his student, Rabbi Elazar Worms. So that's the frame of the texts we'll refer to, especially Rabbi Nechemia and the Kalonymus family. Geographically, we are in Ashkenaz, Germany, and with a special interest on Erfurt. So I'll focus especially on Erfurt, but not only. Some of the manuscripts will be from there. So imagine yourself, you're at the Erfurt Synagogue, one of the oldest synagogues remaining from medieval Europe. The community was, it stopped living there in the 14th century in the pogroms of the mid 14th century during the plague pogroms. And it's a good thing to start with a good program, right? So that's why the manuscripts that were kept in the synagogue of Erfurt were taken by the municipal of Erfurt and they were kept there. So we have some of the manuscripts that were taken from the Jewish community. And now the building is renovated since the end of the 1990. And you can even, after this epidemic, you can even visit it. So just to me inside, we are talking about space that is very typical for Ashkenazi synagogues. And I'm starting with this because we also have to remember always that the manuscripts we are looking at were read at a certain environment in a certain place. And the texts I'm talking about today, some of them were read in this specific synagogue. So that's what the people who ordered this manuscript saw around them. And you can even see the bima here, the place where the bima stood. Now at the synagogue on the upper staircase, you can see a presentation of the manuscripts that were there. And the most famous one is the Erfurt one, the huge Hebrew Bible. It's the most giant Bible, Hebrew Bible, that remained from Ashkenaz. And you can see that's the binding of the book. So it's, you can see how enormous it is. Okay. Now I'm going to talk about the micrography of some Bibles. And I mean the minute, the micrographic scripture that is illuminating the text. It's text that creates an illumination. Now, it was already studied, the Bibles I'll talk about were already studied by two prominent scholars. The first, Rachel Fronda, who discussed the decorative program of Erfurt II, the Bible that will be the focus of our talk today. And she describes Ezekiel's opening page in a footnote, and she suggests that perhaps it carries mystical connections, but without elaborating. And that's what I would like to do now. Another extremely important study is one by Annette Weber, who discussed the meaning of the initial words decorations in Ashkenazi Bibles, including Erfurt I and Erfurt II, in relation to the concept found in the writings of Hasidei Ashkenaz from the Kalonymus family, Rabbi Judah the Pious and Rabbi Elazar of Worms. I would like to add to that and suggest that Erfurt Bible II, there's also a connection to the esoteric ideas of Rabbi Nechemia from Erfurt. So that's my main point here. So we'll start with this micrography from Ezekiel. And we see two creatures, each sitting on a chair, besides the word, the initial word, Vayehi, which starts the book of Ezekiel. And that's what's puzzling for me. Why only two creatures? Because in Ezekiel's vision, we know of four creatures. And it is extremely, no, it's not extreme, but it is known in other Ashkenazi manuscripts that we see the four creatures, and it was studied by other scholars as well, especially the one on the right from the Leipzig Machzor, who was studied by Katrin Kochman-Appel, and we'll go back to that. So we usually see four creatures, a man, an eagle, an ox, and a lion. And they are iconographically related to Christian portrayal of the second coming of Christ or Christ in majesty. So it's typical to European vision. However, when we look at Erfurt II on this Bible, 13th century Bible, we notice there are only two creatures. And there's not only one chair, but two. And so it's not just one, the throne of the Lord, but we see two of them. And in the middle, we see a circle. Now, I believe that everything here in this image is done for a reason, almost everything at least. Now, the circle in the center may represent the divine throne. As according to Rabbi Shlomo Bar Shimshon's Gemara Sidur, the throne is round. And you see on the bottom the manuscript which I translated for. And the throne of glory is round, twice the letter kaf, it's like this, appears there, so that when the we place them opposite each other, they form a complete circle like so. So it's more rare to find the idea that the throne is round, because usually it was portrayed as square. So he emphasizes that it is round. And that's what we see here. Now, when we read what is written inside the circle here, like this, inside the main circle, I brought you here the verses in Hebrew, the ones that are with yellow, it's the text that is inside. And the words are connected by one word following another in a chain of similar words, or words that are written in the same manner, however, their meaning is different. So it's an associative manner of writing them. However, the final two seems to be related to the difference between the Lord's love for Israel, I mean Jacob, and the hatred of Esau. Now, Esau, we should remember that is representative in Jewish writings of the Christians. So when they relate to Esau, they relate also to Jesus and the Christians. And it is emphasized here, but Esau I hated. And it is written next to the character on the right, which establishes him as a villain. Yeah. Over here. So the main text in the entire circle is evolving from harsh judgment to mercy. And again, we see here two chairs and not only one. So if we perceive the scene from right to left, the image is related to Rabbi Nechemia's commentary on the 42 letters, on the name of the 42 letters, Perush Mem Bet Otiyot, where we find the concept of the harsh judgment being converted into mercy. As the throne of judgment, Kisedin, is rolled on wheels, on ofanim, into the throne of mercy, Kiser Rachamim. Thus we see it from right to left, it is from harsh judgment into mercy. And it's in the manuscript you see here. Now, this idea also appears in Rabbi Elazar Von's commentary on the Merkava, where the minister of the abyss, Sara Tehom, resembles an ox until Ezekiel asked for mercy and transferred it into a cherub. Now, if you take a look, you can see that the image of the one on the right appears a bit like an ox, and the one on the left appears like the image of an angel or a man. And you can see here the wings. It takes a lot of imagination here. Perhaps only mine, but bear with me. Okay, so what we see here is the idea of the harsh judgment being rolled into the mercy. So the ideas of Rabbi Elazar of Worms and Rabbi Nechemia of Erfurt can be understood by reflecting as reflected in this image. Now I'd like to go to this image from Proverbs, which interests me most because of the military stuff here. I'm extremely interested in military history. And we see here two characters. On the right, one is holding a sword and great helm, which is a helm that covers the entire face. And the one on the left already has a crown and no helm. And the sword lies next to him. He is not holding the sword. And in the middle, we see a coat of arms and two beasts or two chickens, whatever you'd like to call them, two birds. Now, the great helm is accurate according to 13th century helmets. And this type of helmet was invented in the 1220s. So to find it in a manuscript, in a Hebrew manuscript from the 13th century, we see that they were very much involved in the area where they lived at, and they knew the newest technologies. And also the sword, it resembles a 13th century typical sword. And the shield looks just like the shield of Conrad of Thuringia from 1240. And this manuscript was produced in this area of Thuringia. So they relate to the same area they live in. And you see, it's almost the exact lion. Now, usually the lions in Hebrew manuscripts or in Hebrew art, in Jewish art, refer to the Lion of Judah, Goria Yehuda. And so it's a symbol of the Jewish people, usually. Now, on each side, the birds also reflect the ideas we already saw at the Ezekiel scene, as the bird on the right is composed of verses referring to Din, to judgment, and the one on the left refers to verses of Nechama, consolation. And the entire chapter of Jeremiah, which is used for the bird on the left, deals with the rebuilding of the house of David. So what I suggest here is that we see on the right the fighting character of David, and on the left we see Solomon. And it goes well with the verses that are composing the characters here. Now, the book that ends just before this scene is the book of Job. So we have references to Job as well in some of the verses. So the micrography of both figures is based primarily on verses describing David's kingship and others from the book of Job. Now, the shield is drawn from verses from Song of Songs and Job. And the lion was rendered with words appearing in both figures and in the shield. That is, it is forming an associative and visual links among all parts of this scene. So the lion in the middle and the shield is the glue that glues them together. So I propose reading this scene in light of the text of 17 names of Metatron, Perushivim Shemot Shel Metatron, where the militant aspect of the shield with the Lord's name written is stressed. The Lord's name is written on the shield, of the shield. Someone is drawing something. Okay. That's how I know someone is out there on the other side. Okay, I don't know how to get this up. Okay, in Rabbi Nechemia's commentary on the 70 names, we find Gematria, Al Magen Al Tzava, literally meaning that the shield on the troops, on the army, equals Taftafia, one of the names mentioned in this commentary on the 70 names of Metatron. But moreover, it notes that King David had a shield of gold with the 17 names engraved upon it and the word of Taftafia engraved beneath it. So the shield, when we see a shield next to King David, we should remember that sometimes some of the rabbis saw it as something that is related to the 70 names of Metatron. Now, moreover, in Rabbi Nechemia's commentary of the Alpha Beta de Metatron, which you can see here on the left, the letter Nun is described as a shield with three horns. And it was made to resemble David's shield. The commentary notes that David passed it on until it was acquired by Judah the Maccabee. So it relates to Hanukkah, which we'll celebrate in a few days. So the same shield of David with the name of the Lord Metatron on it passed on until the time of Judah the Maccabee. And it was the letter Nun looks just like a shield. Now, as there is a shield in the micrography decoration between the figures made by verses referring to David's kingship, I suggest that it was inspired by Rabbi Nehemiah's writings. So the person who designed this micrography had these writings in mind, even if he didn't have the same writings that we have now. Perhaps there were more, and we have only what came down to us. Now, if we look closer and we start counting the letters, which I have to admit, it's not a very easy task. And I thank Gal Sofer and also Oren Roman for helping me count all the letters. The gematria of the Lord's name is engraved upon the shield. So a few mathematics, the shield's frame is composed out of 84 pei dalet letters, which is twice 42 membet, like the name of the Lord, membet or Metatron, membet otiyot, as each side is made out of 28 letters. I mean each side of this, okay? Now, there was a letter added just to make it 28. The letter bet, which I marked here. The letter bet was added so that it will count out to 28. And the line we did on the shield was drawn out of 36 letters, lamed vav, which is double chai, double 18, and counting twice 36 equals 72, like the 72 names. So perhaps it's too far-fetched and we should be careful because we all remember, most of us remember an article by Gershom Scholem who went against Weinstock, who overread Gematria. So I'm saying all of this with caution because it's very nice to count letters and in this atmosphere of Hasid Ashkenaz or esoteric writings, but I'm saying this while I'm being very cautious. Now to sum this part out, from the two cases studies examined here, we can conclude that the designer of the micrography decoration in Erfurt Bible 2 had the writings of Rabbi Nehemiah of Erfurt in mind, as well as those of Hasidei Ashkenaz, especially regarding the transformation of harsh judgment into mercy. Now, I would like now to proceed to another manuscript, also from Ashkenaz, also from the 13th century. Now it is housed in London in the British Library. And here on the opening page of Ezekiel, it starts with Ezekiel, but before that, it ends with Isaiah. And we see the four creatures of the Merkava on the upper part of the page and on the lower side, and I'll address the lower part here. Now, if we examine it from right to left, right, where is the red dot here? We can see a lion, an ox, a knight, and an eagle. Now, before coming to this, to understand why this knight, they refer to a wonderful article called Why is This Knight Different? I should mention that the most cutting edge study is presently done on micrography by the project headed by Hannah Lees, the Corpus Masoreticum. So this manuscript, which I'll refer to it now, is part of this project. And if you're interested in Masora or micrography, you should visit this site. Now, the choice to portray the human figure in full armor and as a knight can be explained by the tradition of Jacob's image engraved upon the throne, based on Ezekiel's vision that identifies the human figure as Jacob. And it is a long tradition of this idea that the human figure is that of Jacob. So the night in this micrography may illustrate the verse Abir Yaakov, meaning Jacob's guarding night or Jacob the night. Now, in Hebrew tradition, the verse Abir Yaakov, Jacob the night or Jacob's night, is usually understood as the Lord as being the protector of Jacob, not as in modern Hebrew, which is understood as Jacob as being the night. However, in some of the writings of the 13th century, which are also related to Hasidic Ashkenaz, we find the concept that Jacob himself is the night. And I'm referring to this commentary by Rabbi Chaim Paltiel, as I said, from the 13th century on Genesis. And he says, by the hands of the mighty one, of Jacob, meaning who caused him all of this might and honor, it is Abir Yaakov, that is Jacob, the hero, the champion. So here it is literally understood as Jacob, that the image of Jacob is an image of a knight. Now, what sort of a knight is he? You can see that he has a helmet with a crest on it. And I mean, with this added something on the head, which is added on only at tournaments, this type of crest. It is not part of usual outfit of a knight going out to battle. If he'll try to battle with this one, it would be too heavy. And it is only for the highest rank of nobility. It was never used by Jews. They could own it only at their pawn houses after the tournaments when the Christians left it there to receive some money. But Jews never actually wore this. They were never part of a tournament. And it reflects the highest society in medieval Europe. So portraying such a character of Jacob the Knight with a crest used for the tournaments establishes him as the most noble one of all. And they mean more spiritual nobility, as there weren't such a nobility in real life. And if the one on the left is familiar to you, it's because of the character of Maleficent. I can't do without some cartoons. Now, this knight, if we compare it to the image of Jacob in the Leipzig Machzor, which Katrin Kochman-Appel studied, on the one on the left, you can see that he is holding a book, thus making him a Talmid Chacham, a smart sage. Not a sage, a student. The one on the left, you can see that even though he's dressed like a knight, and I mean the entire outfit, what he's holding in his hand may be actually a horn book, a sort of book that we can understand him as Jacob who is studying and not only going to battle. And there are a few more aspects of his presentation here, but I won't go into that. As I said, Hanalis is also working on this manuscript, and she found out more fascinating ideas about it, especially on the upper part here, where you can see here the storage, which is like a Hasidei Ashkenaz, German pietist. And that's something that Hanalis is working on. So here we have Jacob the Knight in Ezekiel's chariot. Now, the last manuscript I'll talk about is from the Double Machzor, the prayer book. And the image is from Potech Shalei Rachamim, he who opens the gates of mercy for Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. And we can see here that we have the four beasts. And here the lion is facing the ox, which means that there is a peace in heaven and also on earth when they are facing each other. And you can see here the human figure looking like an angel. And what is more unusual is that we see the empty chair. So we see the entire image as the chariot. And it was already studied, already by Rachel Vishnitzer and Gabriel Sedrina and Ilya Rodov, who wrote on this manuscript, and also on not only on the creatures, but also on the dragons and their meaning in the High Holy Days. Now, what I'm interested in is the upper part. And I am here. And if we count them, here, we can see that there are 13 roundels. And actually, they are portrayed as a trefoil. Now, as part of a discussion on this prayer, Rabbi Avigdor ben Elia Katz from Vienna relates to this commentary. And he notes that in his commentary on this prayer, that the throne has 13 windows throughout which the prayer is rises. And Naama ben Shachar wrote on his writings. And I'll just read the Hebrew here. שהוא אב הפותח י' ג' חלונות שהתפילה עולה בהן, that he is the father, which opens 13 windows, which the prayer rises from. Now, there are 13 roundels around the empty chair, and each of them is a trefoil, which is an ornamental shape, that has three foils, usually found in Gothic windows, as you can see in the synagogue from Erfurt. That's the three foil. And I suggest that this odd number, why 13, it's not symmetrical, and they usually do something symmetrical, 12 or 14, not 13. I suggest that this odd number is intentional and might have been inspired by such a commentary on this specific prayer, which is also found in the writings of Rabbi Elazar of Worms, for example, in his Sefer Hashem. And you can find the same idea there, that there are 13 windows from which the prayer rises. Now, any study of Jewish history, of Jewish mysticism, has to mention Michael Schneider, the late Michael Schneider, who also wrote almost about everything. And I would like to end with his study on the four creatures and the idea that when the ox and the lion are facing each other, according to Shir Shirim Zuta, the peace came to the world. So that's in memory of Michael Schneider. So what we saw here is that the ideas of Hasid Ashkenaz and Rabbi Nehemiah of Erfurt can be reflected in some of the manuscripts produced in Ashkenaz, in 13th century Ashkenaz. Okay. So I'll stop sharing. And if there are any questions, I'll just read them. I'll just read one question. Are the four figures at all related to the zodiac? They are related usually to the idea of Ezekiel's vision of the four creatures around the chair. Any other questions? Okay, one of the questions. How did you come to this project? Oh, that's a long story. I got interested in the idea of Ezekiel when I was working on images of knights, and especially with the one with Avir Yaakov, Jacob the Knight. And I just started to look at different manuscripts at the National Library in Jerusalem. Then it was with microfilm, and I came across the Erfurt Bibles, and I just kept them in a file somewhere in my computer. And afterwards, I just returned to it. So that's how I came to it. Okay, let's see more questions. Is it typical to have figures outlined in words, not filled in completely? Yes, it is typical. It is something that we know already from the earliest manuscript, the earliest ones that survive from northern Africa, most of them from Egypt, from the end of the 10th century, where we find micrography, and it is something that it's almost unique to Jewish art throughout the Middle Ages. And we can find it from Yemen to Spain to Ashkenaz, anywhere you can think about this sort of portrayal. Is it words creating reality? Ooh, yeah, sure. Yes. Words creating reality. That's something that you can find, especially in the ideas of Hasid Ashkenaz, and later on also. The idea that the words they are presenting is something to do with Dvikut, the way the believer came to be closer to the Lord. So yes. Can you comment on the image of the special cherub you showed at the beginning? Well, I wish there was an image of the special cherub. Actually, when I worked on the Abir Yaakov image, I'll just show it on the screen. So yeah, you can all see my presentation here. When I worked here on this, this one, at first I thought perhaps it's the special cherub, and I spent 2 weeks, 2 whole weeks from morning to evening trying to prove that, and I just proved the opposite, that it has nothing to do with the special cherub. So the ideas, as far as I know, the ideas of the special cherub are only in texts and not in images so far. Perhaps someone else will find something. Okay, let's see if there are any more. Was there a problem depicting knights after the crusade with all anti-Jewish atrocities? Well, that's something that Ivan Marcus wrote about in his article on why is this knight different? He wrote about the idea of using a different type of knights as opposed to the knights or the warriors from the First Crusade. And that's something that I elaborated on in visual stuff, that the Jews portray themselves as knights, especially as more spiritual knights, as opposed to Christian knights who are more interested in the violence. So they opposed to one another. I always do this joke, there is a good knight and bad knight in Jewish manuscripts. So it depends which knight they want to depict. One more question. Where is the image of the bird that you showed from? It's from the Erfurt Bible, Erfurt Bible 2. And by the way, all these manuscripts are available online. You can look for them at the National Library website, Ktiv website. Thank you very much.